I live just a few miles north of the Saratoga Springs city line in the town of Wilton. And one of the things that this means is that when I need to go out to the Wilton Mall or one of the big box stores out there or one of the restaurants in the strip mall or something out there, it means that I do not take Route 50 and then go past Loughberry Lake and then go over the big 4-5-lane bridge over the Northway to get to those places. I don't go that way often. Instead, I will go over by McGregor Links Country Club, and then you take that little, what is it, car road, and you get down to Jones Road, and you take a turn there, and you go right past the Dorothy Nolan Elementary School, and then you curve around, and you go up and over the Northway on a little two-lane bridge. Eventually, you turn out on Route 50, but instead of going north to the mall, I'm coming south. There used to be, after you passed the fire department and the emergency services thing, there was a little intersection right there, just this little road that came off of it to 2 or 3 houses. Now, instead of that little intersection, there is a traffic circle right there. They put that there because, there's a whole new development that's going in there. There's 300, maybe 400 new homes north of that traffic circle are going to be right there. So lots more traffic. Little simple intersection isn't going to cut it. They put a traffic circle in. Well, I mean, have you noticed it? There are more roundabouts than there used to be. Yeah. I mean, the evidence is clear that they drastically reduced the number of traffic accidents as compared to regular intersections. But how many of us feel a little trepidation when we're going to get into a traffic circle, right? Uh-huh. There is a multi-lane roundabout that circles a monument to a Polish-American Revolutionary War general in Boston. And there's a circle, multi-lane rotary that goes around that monument to that guy. And I think I went around it for 3 days once. I mean, the more I've gone through these things, the easier it seems to be, less trepidation. But there are more roundabouts being built all of the time. That's not an illusion. 20 or 30 years ago, you really didn't run into these things unless you lived in Boston or lived in, like, Washington, D.C. But now they're all over the place. All over the place. Utah has traffic circles now. There is a mayor of a town called Carmel, a suburb of Indianapolis. His name is Jim Brainerd. He's a Republican who's been serving as mayor for that town, been elected 7 times. And one of the main things that he has done is he has put roundabouts in that town. If you want to go to the roundaboutiest town in the country, go to Carmel, Indiana, and he's put in over 140 roundabouts in his city while he's been mayor. And that's as of like last year, November. He's evidently, I don't think he's running for re-election again, so this is his last year in office. And he says by the time he leaves, as of last November, I think there were 9 traffic signals left in the town. He says when he leaves, there's only going to be one. Only going to be one. Can you even imagine that? It's a brave new traffic world, I guess. The consultant and spiritual director, Susan Beaumont, uses roundabouts as an example of how when we get ourselves to tolerate something a little different, tolerate something that feels like a little bit of chaos, that something else can emerge. She says, at first glance, the roundabout appears to invite chaos when compared to the traditional stop sign or traffic light. But instead of resulting in disaster, there's a Washington Post article that says, in general, a roundabout will drive down fatal crashes by 90% and cut all car crash injuries by at least 75%, even while accommodating a higher volume of cars. And I guess it's no big mystery why that emerges, why this new land of traffic safety emerges from all of this. Susan Beaumont says, what happens is this: traffic circles encourage slower speeds and greater awareness of surroundings. The road isn't just continuing right on, it's curving and whatnot. Beaumont says that this is an example to her of something called emergence, collective order arising naturally out of chaos with the imposition of just a few basic rules. Beaumont addresses her reader in her book after she's talked about these traffic circle things, and she writes, "How many of you are screaming at the page right now, 'But I hate driving through traffic circles. The chaos is unnerving.'" And then Beaumont replies to that theoretical reader and says, "Exactly. Welcome to emergence." I should explain what emergence is a little bit more, but I think I'm getting ahead of myself a bit, because I think something else that we need to recognize is, well, I'm not hearing a whole lot of compassion in Susan Beaumont right there about the trepidation that we feel when we run into those traffic circles. And if we're just thinking about this as a metaphor for change and chaos that we confront generally, I don't think that this example is quite adequate to what it actually feels like sometimes. I think a better example of that, a better example of those strong feelings that we do feel in those situations where we're confronting something radically new, radically different that we don't understand. There's a poem by Aracelis Zermay called Second Estrangement, and it's this wonderful depiction of just how powerful that feeling can be. Lori's going to read this poem for you.
"Please raise your hand, whomever else of you has been a child lost in a market or a mall, without knowing it at first, following a stranger, accidentally thinking he is yours, your family or parent, even grabbing for his hands, even calling the word you said then for father, only to see the face look strangely down, utterly foreign, utterly not the one who loves you. You are a bird suddenly stunned by the glass partitions of rooms. How far the world you knew, and tall and filled finally with strangers."
Most of the time, we walk around believing that we know where we are and that the ground before us is pretty stable. We have faith that our world just works in a certain way. Like when I walk into a grocery store, the person behind the counter is going to give me a little smile and say, "How can I help you?" When I move through the world, I generally just assume that people are going to be inclined to be kind or nice to one another. And there are all sorts of these little things that we assume that we have a kind of faith in as we move through the world. Like when I was a kid, if I'm in a new space and we're walking around as a family, I'm thinking my dad is right here. He's not going anywhere. That's the assumption that I make. And then that moment when those beliefs we have, the assumptions that we make, the faith that we normally act with, all of a sudden it gets challenged, and boy, something looks different. And what a profound feeling that is. The child in Jeremiah's poem is like a bird who's been flying along with perfect faith that the way forward is as clear as it looks. And then, bang, the bird slams into glass that it didn't realize was there. The child thought that they were following their father, but it turns out that person is not their father, and now everything is different. How far the world you knew, and tall, and filled, finally, with strangers. What a profound and profoundly scary moment. in lots of different ways, in lots of different parts of our lives, we feel like this these days. And I just want to pause for a moment and just acknowledge that that's true. Our Unitarian forebear, Ralph Waldo Emerson, did not, to my knowledge, ever write about roundabouts or traffic circles. But he did write an essay called Circles, and in that essay, he describes this moment of realization that everything all of a sudden is new. He describes it like this: all that we reckoned settled shakes and rattles, and literatures, cities, climates, religions leave their foundations and dance before our eyes. That is an accurate description of today, right? All that we reckon settled shakes and rattles, literatures, cities, climates, religions leave their foundations and dance before our eyes. I'm just thinking about the scenes from New York City the last couple of days, right? All those roads turned into lakes and rivers, and just like two or three weeks before that, those streets were filled with people marching to call attention to the fragility of the climate and to try to persuade our leaders to divest ourselves and stop using fossil fuels. Cities, literatures, religions shaked with their foundation. Religion is in a definite state these days. I mean, before the pandemic, people were already drifting away from participating in traditional religion. Attendance at religious services was already going down. And then the pandemic hit and the trend became trendier, I guess. Well, here in this congregation, I think before the pandemic, we could be fairly blithe about that larger reality because we were growing. We were doing just fine. And then the pandemic hit us too, and well, we took a hit. The world is so different now. So much seems unsettled, undecided, chaotic. While he doesn't talk about traffic circles in his essay Circles, Emerson does talk about change. That's the whole thing behind that essay of his. For Emerson, the image of circles leads him into a meditation on the ever-growing and changing circles of our human understanding and awareness. In his mind's eye, a human life is, quote, a self-evolving circle which, from a ring imperceptibly small, rushes on all sides outwards to new and larger circles, and that without end. Emerson says, our life is an apprenticeship to the truth that around every circle another can be drawn, that there is no end in nature, but every end is a beginning, that there is always another dawn risen on mid-noon, and under every deep, a lower deep opens. Now, I think Emerson, when he's writing these essays, has kind of a flair for the dramatic. He likes to kind of play things up maybe a little bit, but he might not be doing enough justice here to how different things can feel and how profound change can feel and how so shocking it can feel when it feels like something new is emerging or that we just don't know what is emerging. He's carrying two truths, I think. On the one hand, our world and we are constantly changing and something new is emerging and it feels profoundly alarming. And on the other hand, our world and we are constantly changing and something new is emerging and it feels profoundly hopeful. And then he takes that a little bit further and he kind of demonstrates that we can't really get the hope without the chaos. What Emerson knows about people is that, quote, people wish to be settled, but only as far as they are unsettled is there any hope for them. And this is because that's the world we live in. Emerson believes in nature, every moment is new. The past is always swallowed and forgotten. The coming only is sacred. Nothing is secure but life, transition, the energizing spirit. I'm not sure if I'm entirely with Emerson on all of that. I mean, the past isn't always forgotten, and frankly, it's better if there's some bits of our past that we haven't been paying attention to and had forgotten that we should be remembering. We don't want to just ignore or forget about our heritage or our forebears. I mean, here I am quoting an ancestor, right? I think Emerson might be pleased that he's remembered. But I do appreciate what he says, or that he admits, or that he simply asserts that there are some securities that he believes in. Nothing is secure but life, transition, the energizing spirit. Life, transition, and the energizing spirit, those things are secure. Those are things we can have faith in. And with that faith, Emerson takes an enthusiastic leap. He says, I cast away in this new moment all my once hoarded knowledge as vacant and vain. Now, for the first time, seem I to know anything rightly. The simplest words, we do not know what they mean, except when we love and aspire. We don't know what the simplest words mean, except when we love and aspire. I aspire to having faith in life, faith in transition, faith in the energizing spirit, faith in an ever-present love. And in the chaos of the moment, there are times when I really do feel that faith, and there are other moments not so much. And in those moments, when I look up and that tall stranger is staring down at me, who I thought I knew, what do I do next? How do I address that situation? How can I get through it? And here's where emergence comes back. Safety emerges from traffic circles. When we're driving on a road and then we have to enter the new world of the traffic circle, a road that we've been on is now changing and now it's a circle, what do we do? Traffic circles encourage slower speeds and greater awareness of our surroundings, says Beaumont. As fast as the pace of change seems to be scampering along, we still have to breathe. Even if we only have a moment, we have a moment in which we can just notice and try to be open to what's going on. Not judge it or figure out or think which is good or which is bad or any of that stuff, but just to be open as much as we can to what is happening. What are all the feelings of this moment? Where are we? Who are we with? A traffic circle might seem like chaos, but it's really governed by just one basic rule. Yield to the cars in the circle. One little rule, and then from this thing that looks like it's going to be chaos, this thing called safety emerges. Beaumont, in her book on leadership that I'm referring to, which is called, by the way, How to Lead When You Don't Know Where You're Going. Traffic circles aren't the only example that she uses in there. Not content with traffic circles, she also wants us to take a look at blackbirds and starlings and the way that they swarm. She wants us to consider that fascinating phenomenon of the murmuration, that spellbinding ebb and flow of a murmuration, that flock. How does that happen? It comes about from three rules. Three rules. As Beaumont presents them, they go like this. Rule number one, the rule of separation. Avoid crowding your neighbor. Have respect for your neighbor. Don't encroach upon them. Honor them by making room for them. That's the rule of separation. Rule number two, the rule of cohesion. Stay close to your neighbor, right? Beaumont says, never allow too much space to emerge between you and your closest flying companion. Always seek to move toward another bird. We need one another, and as a flock, we make a commitment to be with one another. And what if we just moved towards one another? So, rule of separation, rule of cohesion, rule number three, the rule of alignment. For the birds, this means steer toward the average heading of your six closest neighbors. Right? So the individual bird is not trying to control the direction of the flock, trying to be open to all the directions that other people are taking, and honor the movement of all the birds around them. The movement of each individual bird is received and honored, and the movement of every individual bird, whichever direction that they move in, it affects everybody around them. It's allowed to affect everybody around them. Follow those three rules and murmuration will emerge if you happen to be a bunch of birds in flight. In chaotic times when things are happening so quickly and we are not sure what can happen next, I wonder if these rules feel like something I can lean into, because they feel bigger than that murmuration thing, even when I was just reading them then, at least to me. In a chaotic situation, what can I do? I can make room for people rather than trying to take up all the room. I know I will probably stumble into people now and again, but when I do, I can apologize, and that apology will make room. And I can recommit to making room. The wholeness of the people around me matters. And I can commit to that, to honoring that. I can also commit to staying close. What if we seek to move towards another person? I see or feel you there. Maybe you're in some distress. Maybe you're experiencing some excitement and you're moving in a particular direction. The distance between us is increasing, and I'm not going to let that distance just grow. I'm going to stay close. Go ahead and move the way you need to, but I'm not going to let you just disappear. And I can also try to be open in the moment to all those directions that people seem to be heading in. This feels to me like a practice of discernment, just being open. What are all of those directions? What's the direction that I feel called in, and where's kind of the average of that? What direction would that be? Can I let myself move in that direction? Can I let go of being the one who gets to decide what the direction is? There are other factors to take into account. In chaotic times, avoid crowding your neighbor. Never allow too much space to emerge between you and your neighbor. And steer towards the average heading of the people around you, and that includes you. If we can make room, stay close, and move in a way that takes into account how the people around us feel and how they feel called to move, if we practice that, I wonder what brave new world might emerge.